This is a Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. We have such an exciting guest today. It's great to have on somebody that is a pioneer in a new old area, and she'll explain that to you. But she's fascinating in what she is bringing out to the public, and we will be with Catherine Seo in just a few minutes. We have some announcements to make. We're being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, and one of the things we do is stick a microphone in front of your face and take a 30-second sample of your voice, and then we use the frequencies of your voice to look at what is going on in your brain, because your brain speaks math and your mouth speaks math, almost like notes in a song. The music can be turned into math. So we've used that to come up with a corollary that people with similar issues have similar vocal anomalies. And we have done a research project about lipidemia, which we're going to talk about, and we're going to invite you to have your vocal print done for free to see if there's anything in your voice that would indicate this very new old disease is part of your health. So we have lots of questions already have come in for our guests, so it is a topic that a lot of people are interested in and don't know about, and you're going to get the scoop here along with how to get more information from our guest that we'll be with in a few minutes. Richard, you have a few announcements?
I do. First, I'll remind people, and I know this is going to be one of those shows people are going to listen to again soon, because there's so much information about this, and it's such a, up until Catherine has been out there on the pavement telling the world, which is really amazing, about lipedema, that you're going to want to hear this. And the easiest way to do that is to, about 10 to 15 minutes after the show ends, you can go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Radio Archive player, and the last five shows that we've done will be there in that player, and this show will be there. That's one way to find it and hear it. Also, you can go to places like Stitcher.com, which is a free cross-platform, works everywhere, works on your computer, works on your iPhone, works on your Android phone, where you can go to that app and search for Sherry Edwards, and you'll find upwards of now 500 shows. It always amazes me, 500 shows. And also you could do the same thing by going to iTunes, if you so desire, and go to iTunes and search for, again, Sherry Edwards, and you'll find her there. Or my favorite is to join up at blogtalkradio.com for free. You can have a free account. They won't, don't spam you. They don't, you know, haven't done anything bad to me yet, and I've been with them for years. And if you sign up there, then you can search for, again, Sherry Edwards. Find all the shows there. You'll find all the show notes, all the show descriptions. And you can not only listen to them there, but it's an easy way to share and follow other shows, not only our show, but other shows that we do. And other shows in general, there's thousands and thousands of hours of things to listen to on Blog Talk Radio. It's a great listening platform. So that's that. And then I do have one environmental announcement. You know how I am. Can't be helped. I'm just an environmental kind of guy. So this is amazing. There's an article out of Grist. I'll put this in the chat. They're saying this article has to do with, in America, a coal pollution is nearly as deadly as car crashes. And so what they're talking about is the pollution from coal plants from fossil fuel-powered plants is almost as hazardous to people's health in long term as car crashes. One of the studies that they looked at is in the UK, the cleaning the air of fossil fuel pollution, which includes also coal, would mean a 40% drop in the bronchitis death rate among males. I'm not sure why males. but it's males, and it's a study looking at the amount of particulate in the air. In New York City, they're talking about a death rate of almost by 50% by bronchial issues. You know, just relating a lot of, you know, they're talking about heart conditions, they're talking about stomach cancer, they're talking about just elevated levels due to air pollution, particulates in the air, not only particulates, but the kinds of particulates that are derived from all of those fossil fuels. And a little footnote, just because I can't help myself, I'm trying to find this quickly, I have it written down, but I can't quite find the total statement, having to do with the $340 million a year in annual federal tax subsidies that are given to the U.S. coal companies does nothing for jobs. Does nothing to get more jobs, nothing about jobs. It just subsidies, amazing tax subsidies to the U.S. coal companies in America, $340 million. Not that that could go to education, let's say. All right. That's my announcement. I'll stop there.
I'm going to make a couple of comments about this, that it is more than just the coal industry. We had coal when I was growing up in our furnace, and you could blow your nose and black soot come out your nose. And my mother died of lung cancer from breathing that for many, many years. But I think every good side has a bad side. And part of why they brought coal mining into this community, at least, and I live in Appalachia, Ohio, was as a money incentive to bring the poverty up. So although I have been affected by this, I can see part of why the government did it. There's nothing here. And so, well, there was coal. And so to jerk the economic status of the place upward, they did that. So I also want to encourage people, since there's much more information coming out now about the damage vaccines is doing, to join Sherry Tenpenny's, T-E-N-P-E-N-N-Y, and she spells her name a little different. I think it's S-H-E-R-I, Sherry Tenpenny. But she is putting out some information now that's just incredible about the push for adults to have mandatory vaccines. And what we push for is to test people before the vaccines to see if they're ready and to put some kind of vocal profiling together that we have all the time together so that we can look at how the body is going to respond to that particular vaccine. We put that out every year with the flu vaccines. We just had, slightly different subject here, we just had our two-day free class for people where we provided your software, your class, almost everything you needed to start a bioacoustic community center. I mean, we just did this one on neuroplasticity because we've been looking at some of Andrew Molden's work, and he can show that vaccines have caused microstrokes. But if you have the right nutrition for the brain, then that doesn't happen, which is another readiness for vaccines, mostly for our kids. They're the ones that seem to be influenced by this. Gardasil is coming up big right now. So National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC. NVIC, Barbara Lowe Fisher, and we have done her voice. She is telling the truth, and so is Sherry Tenpenny. So I would encourage you to be at least educate yourself about what's going on, and they also have an attorney that we have had on the show, Alan Phillips, and he tells you how to protect yourself legally against all of that. Okay, that's a lot of information right there. And we are very happy to be able to bring you all of these tools and solutions through our website, soundhealthoptions.com. You can go there and read about our guests and our shows on Sunday and Tuesday, and we're adding more all the time. We love bringing you guests that can enlighten your load, enlighten your mind, and make your life a little more pleasant. And with that, Richard, would you please introduce our guest?
Happy to. I know this is going to be a romp of a conversation. When Catherine Seal was confronted with almost certain immobility and complications from misdiagnosed lipedema, she traveled the world interviewing other patients, doctors, surgeons, and experts looking for answers. Catherine produced and directed the documentary, The Disease They Call Fat. It is this story. Her research is focused on empowering women who experience the distortions of body image as represented in the media, applying self-compassion and other meditation and lifestyle techniques. Catherine holds a doctorate in...
Okay. My microphone, but there is a terrible feedback.
I know. I'm not sure what that is. I hear that.
Could it be something radio?
Maybe. Maybe.
It has a delay on it.
It does. Let me finish this. Her research is focused on empowering women who experience the distortions of body image as represented in the media, applying self-compassion and other meditation and lifestyle techniques. Catherine holds a doctorate in media psychology and is a co-director of the Lipedema Project. Catherine joins us to discuss leading thoughts on lipedema education, research, and treatment. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. It's lovely to be with both of you and your listening audience.
They've got questions, but I have an opening question.
Yes.
This has been an amazing journey for you, and this is a two-part question. A, did you think that you would be the spokesperson for lipedema when you started all this? And or how did this all start? I mean, how did you become like the... I mean this in a kind way, but almost like the poster child for lipedema. How did this start and how did you get here?
Well, Richard, I have to be honest. This was not what I had in mind. I did not start with this end in mind. So let me back up. I have a history there where I struggled with weight. In 1986, I found a 12-step program and lost 140 pounds and maintained that weight loss until I hit perimenopause. At perimenopause, I slowly started to gain weight, even though my lifestyle was consistent as it had been for over 25 years, where I weighed and measured a very low-carb food plan, and I exercised regularly, and I did all of the quote-unquote right things. The weight gain continued. Now, when I say a weight gain, at first it was over a year, it was 10 pounds, and then it started to creep up. But having had a history as I had, it was disheartening for me. I didn't know what to do. And I also began to experience unexplained swelling in my limbs and my legs. So I went to my primary care, who was incredible, wonderful, and he was very, very supportive. And anyway, I developed another problem and ended up needing surgery. So I had a series of surgeries. And after the final surgery, which happened in 2011, I experienced significant complications that nobody could figure out. I was having uncontrollable swelling. I was having excruciating pain. So there was a series of things that happened. And I can remember the moment for a number of months. I kept struggling to try and get an answer from my surgeon and from his staff. And what happened, well, it's always very complex when you're dealing with the healthcare system, but I can remember the moment realizing that it wasn't that they didn't want to help. It's that they didn't know what to do and they didn't know what was going on. And that was a shift for me. That was the point at which I really felt that I had a choice. And the choice was to go along on the path that I was on at that moment and end up immobile in a wheelchair incapacitated. And I was in my early 60s, and I wasn't ready for that. Nope, wasn't going to go that way. And then the other option was, I mean, and this is from years of my own spiritual practices, to take total responsibility for what had happened and say, okay, this has happened. It's happened for a reason. There's got to be a solution. And if the solution's to be found, I'm the one who's going to have to find it. And it was a tough transition. I can't say it was easy. I can remember sitting in days and days of sobbing and, you know, why me? And I don't understand. And why is there no one who can really help? My primary care, God bless his heart, he really did try, but he didn't know what was going on. My surgeon was less kind, but he still didn't know what was going on. So when I started along the journey of saying, okay, every problem has an answer. This is my problem. I just need to keep searching until I find an answer. And so I did. I began to find some answers. I found out a lot about the lymph system, about swelling, about lymphedema, which I had at that point. So I started treatment for lymphedema. Treatment for lymphedema includes something called manual lymph drainage, which is a hands-on therapeutic approach, as well as more changes in my food plan. I changed even more radically. Movement, exercise, did a lot more exercise than I've been doing. I took a leave of absence from work and from school. I'm a professor, so I said, okay, let me just dive in and let me see what I can find out. Well, I got to a certain point, and it became clear that there were, that, you know, my legs just were not, it was stuck. I wasn't changing. I was still having persistent swelling. I was still having problems. And so a turning point came when I was with my physical therapist, my lymphedema specialist, and I asked her if there was anything that I could read about it. And so she gave me a textbook by Professors Michael and Atulka Foldy, who at that point I didn't know, but they are considered the most prominent clinicians and researchers in the field of lymphology. Anyway, she handed me the textbook, and I was undergoing an hour, 90-minute treatment at that point, so I took that time to go through the book. I was on a pump. There's a treatment where you're using a pneumatic pump. So I was on the pump. She had gone to work with another patient. And so I went to look through the textbook, and I found a chapter on lipedema. Now, in my research, I had seen the word. I had read a little bit about it. But at that point, I had been researching about lymphedema. So when I read the chapter on lipedema, you know, when you see those, you know, quick quizzes, that's, you know, the astrological quiz that says, okay, if you're this, if you're this, if you're this, if you're this, then you're that. Well, that's what happened. I had that aha moment where I went, oh my God, the reason why things are not changing is that we're not, you know, we're not diagnosing the right disease. And so when Melissa came in, my lymphedema therapist, I said to Melissa, I think this is more than just lymphedema. I think it's lipedema. And she looked at me and she went, oh, my God, I think you're right. Because the two of us had been struggling trying to figure this out. So that was a turning point. I have to say that at that point, once I had a name for it, once I realized that it was something other than my own failure at being able to diet and maintain weight loss successfully over a lifetime, like so many women feel. The first thing that came up was this phrase, is, you mean it's not my fault? I mean, I've spent a lifetime blaming myself. And that seemed to open something up. And As I mentioned, I'm a professor, so I started, and I teach research, so I started to just dive in to find everything that I could. And the problem was there was very little. But I did find out that it was a good idea to get something called a lymphoscintigraphy, which is similar to an MRI. It tracks the lymphatic system with a very complex camera. They do it in nuclear medicine in the hospitals. So anyway, I had one of those, and come to find out there were some very fundamental problems that were a result of the surgery. So the thing that turned it around, and I talk about this whenever people ask because it's just such an incredible support structure, but my primary care, Dr. Carmody, became a champion and a supporter. When he called to tell me the results of this lymphoscintigraphy, which was not positive, it was, you know, wasn't great news. And at that point, I had just found out about lipedema, and I said to him, Dr. Carmody, I think it's because of this very little known disease. And he said to me, I can still, you know, remember. He said to me, how exciting. Huh. And I'm like, okay, I'm telling you I have this incurable disease that it's what I've been struggling with, and you're saying how exciting, you know. And then he went, exactly.
Amazing.
I know. And then he went on to say, and this was, again, I have been very blessed. I've had a number of turning points. He said to me, we've been looking for a solution for years because, you know, he literally had sent me for every test. You know, swelling can often be associated with heart problems. So I went through batteries of tests to make sure everything was okay. So he said, we have been looking for a solution for a year, and it sounds like you have found the solution. Then he said, and this was what made all the difference, he said to me, you now know more about that than I do. You're going to help me so that I can help you. Can you send me?
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I just, like, he is the epitome of what I would wish on everyone for having a partner in healthcare. So, so I had been doing all this research, and the only thing I could think to do, because I had so much information, and if I sent him all the information that I had, there would be no way he could sort through it. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll put it on a website. So I have a background in web development, so I put up a very fundamental site, very easy, and I started to sort the research into categories. And we ended up, he found a couple, like three or four, scholarly articles, scientifically based, that were up to his standards and that were representative. And so he was able to start working with me and to diagnose me. But the thing that shifted, and this was, again, this is a very long answer to your question, how I ended up here. When I put up the website, I put it up for Dr. Carmody, my primary care, and in hopes that my surgeon would also help. You know, he turned to go in a different direction. But its purpose was really as a repository. And what happened is within a week, I started to hear from women all around the world. Like, it wasn't huge amounts. I got maybe three or four emails. Someone contacted me from the U.S. Somebody contacted me from the U.K., I got an email from someone in Europe, and I got an email from someone like in Australia. And their emails were heart-wrenching. And it was the same that I had felt for a lifetime. I'm doing everything I possibly can. I have this fat deposition. It hurts. The problem with the fat is it's actually painful, and no one listened to them. And one story led to another, and before I knew it, I was getting a lot of contact. And so The thing about lipedema that has been remarkable is that it's been crowdsourced, if you will. It's like the women who have the disorder have banded together. We have a number of online Facebook groups that are support groups. One, I think the first one started in Australia, and then there was one in the UK, and then one grew here in the US, and now there are quite a few. And so there is an exchange of information. That's the beauty of where we are with our technology, that women in this case, because lipedema is primarily a disease that impacts women because it's hormonally driven in some way. They don't know why or how, but we do know it has a hormonal component as well as a vascular and a lymphatic component, and also affects the metabolism. But it was the, you know, helping one another and being a part of a community that began to get what the questions were and then eventually what the answers are.
Well, and it also seems there's so much power in finding I'm not nuts.
Right.
That seems that I'm not demeaning anybody in any way, but I mean, it is so empowering to like suddenly go, oh my God, I'm not crazy, because you're really being treated by Western medicine, even though this is an international issue, I'll call it that, traditional mm-hmm. medical training, that you suddenly have a group going, wait a minute, I have that, you have that? And then, mm-hmm. you know, and you're in the perfect time now of, like you say, the advantage of social media and all of this and having sites is there can be an international audience of people supporting each other going, I had that, here's what I did, and, you know, having that whole conversation. But that leads me back to a question of lipedema has been on the books as an observed, I don't know what that would be called, condition,
mm-hmm.
since the 40s, since 1940s. Why do you think it's just been always sort of pushed aside? Because doctors really don't know much about the lymphatics to get with. What are they in their education? They get like 15 minutes on the lymphs. They're there. This is what they do. Next. You know, I mean, is that part of it, do you think, in your research? Is it just sort of been ignored? Okay.
Yes. So lipedema was first recognized, as you said, in 1940 by doctors Allen and Hines at the Mayo Clinic. And then they published on it a scientific paper in 1951. So even in the 9 years, it was known, very little was done, and then they published about it, and still nothing was done. So I have to say that I've had so many different emotional responses to dealing with the healthcare system. And here's where I've landed after, you know, literally 5 years of doing a lot of work with it, is that most physicians are doing the very best they can in very difficult times. They are, most hospitals limit primary care visits to 15 minutes. And during that 15 minutes, thank God my primary care doesn't go by that rule. But within that 15 minutes, you can only get a certain amount of information and uh-huh. understanding. So because it's driven by HMOs and what's happening in our insurance system, all I have to say, it's incredibly complex. So given that, most doctors have, as you say, no more than 15 minutes at best, 2 hours learning about the lymphatic system, which is a major system. And not only that, our immune system is part of the lymphatic system. So, you know, they come in not knowing or having the background. And then they have a disorder that looks like something else. So lipedema looks like overweight or obesity. You have fat disposition that's imbalanced. So classic lipedema, you have a smaller upper body and you have a much larger lower body. So your butt, hips, legs are generally affected. Your upper arms can be affected. And it has a classic distribution. The feet are spared, which means that your feet don't swell. So you can often have perfectly normal feet, and then at the ankle, all of a sudden, you balloon out, and your legs take on a shape of their own. They're often called column-like tree trunk legs. And so many doctors, when they examine, they see someone who they can assume is eating too much, not exercising or moving enough. So there's this implicit bias that most women get met with. And it's not always implicit. A lot of times it's explicit, where a doctor will say, well, here, go on a diet, come back when you lose 75 pounds. And a number of cases of women where that's happened consistently, the disease has progressed and they've ended up in very serious incapacitated situations where they need, wheelchairs in order to survive.
Uh-huh.
And that's part of what we've started to intervene on. And I have to say the intervention has come with partnership between the community and patients and physicians, clinicians, researchers who have interest in this area, knowledge, skill, and have compassion. And so I actually feel, given the state, that we've had really a miraculous breakthrough with movement in a direction towards understanding and healing. It, you know, to me, it's not been quick because it's been, 5 years. But in the scheme of things, the way things move in traditional medical settings, it's been very quick.
I guess that's true. Western medicine is slow to move forward. So I, on the scale of things, I guess that's completely true. But it's always amazing, and everything, as I read your monograph and I listened to a bunch of videos you did, it was an amazing, when you had surgeries and you did this and you had that and you lost a lot of weight and you were doing really well, and then all of a sudden, once again, the hormones kicked in and, you regressed in a certain way. You were certainly, I'm laughing because I'm thinking, and I'll ask about this, but I'm going to say this first as a thing, is that you were eating a really clean diet, you were eating the perfect sort of William Davis, gluten-free, grain-free, high clean vegetables, lots of, good protein, healthy, just amazingly healthy food, and then perimenopause cause kicked in. And you're like, wait a minute, what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it does seem like there is a hormone trigger or some kind of trigger, but it's still a mystery as to how this all starts.
Mm-hmm.
But you did, what my point there was, is that you must have been really healthy considering your diet, and yet this still occurred again. And do they observe anything about that? Or really at this point, you're the expert. You're the educator getting doctors to go, wow, and now it's coming together. So I think it's an exciting time, but it's still really hard. And is that, what would be the first step you would say for somebody who finds that they have lipedema? Would you say that diet is a great place to start?
Let me just take a step back, Richard, people listening are not aware of the disorder. So lipedema is a fat disorder, and it generally runs in families. So we believe it has a genetic component because oftentimes mothers give it to their daughters, who then in turn give it to their daughters. But the male can be a carrier. So, your dad's family could have it in the genetic line, and your dad can be a carrier. You can get it from your dad, and then you can give it to your daughter, et cetera, et cetera. So we believe in a very strong genetic component. It's occurs almost exclusively in women. There are cases of men who've had hormonal disturbances that have gotten lipedema. It's very, very, very rare. It can also, weight is irrelevant, though it seems that obesity is a comorbidity or comes along as a part of lipedema. But there are women who are very thin who also have lipedema. They have very thin, some of them size 2 or size 4 upper bodies and say 16 or 18 lower bodies. And when we see this, we say, oh, it must be, you know, some kind of genetic thing. Well, it's not. It's actually a disease. And part of the problem is that it's so known and under-recognized that it's often misdiagnosed, as we've been talking about. The way that the fat distributes itself is in one of 5 ways. It can be just in the hips, it can be in the butt and hips, it can be in the thighs, it can be in the entire leg, it can be in the upper arms and the lower arms, sometimes the forearms as well. It can be all over those pieces, and they've even begun to find that lipedema can be in other parts of the body. But that's the main way that people recognize it. The thing that sort of typifies it is that there's a painful fat. It's often called a painful fat syndrome, where pain comes in the, if you palpate or if you put pressure on it, you'll feel either a burning sensation or a pain of some kind, or sometimes it's even just in walking. So you have this sort of mystery to most doctors where, you know, they don't put all the pieces together because they don't have the puzzle piece. And so when that happens, you actually have women who take it on themselves and blame themselves. So, and the other part of that is most women don't know. Let me just say that the figures that we have, professors and Michael and Atulka Foldy, they have a clinic in Germany where they deal with lymphatic issues. They're, as I said, the most prominent folks in the world, really, on lymphology. So they have a clinic that's like a rehab clinic for lymphology. And in their book, they say that in 1 year, they tracked that 11% of women who came in for treatment had lipedema. Now, there's some discussion. There's other researchers who've talked anywhere from, you know, 11% to 39% of women have it. But it seems like it's something that is more prevalent than anyone has up till now been aware of. So if we take the 11% figure, that means that there are 17 million women in the U.S. alone that have this kind of a disorder and don't know about it. And that's what's striking. And that's what's striking. So, you know, with all of us are aware of the distortions of media and how media objectifies and distorts women and our bodies and our food and our diets. And it's a multi-billion dollar industry. You know, a friend of mine, a colleague, and her research is around women and body image, and she talks about the magic bullet. She talks about, you know, being in the checkout line at the grocery and taking a look at the women's magazines. And on the same magazine, it says, you know, diet and lose 20 pounds this week. And right next to it is a picture of a blueberry pie saying, here's this wonderful pie. Or, you know, like we have these mixed messages. And so there's nowhere in our health culture that's more distorted than everything that's been happening around obesity. So you have this perfect storm, if you will. And to even find the solution or find that there's something more than the fact that you may have eaten a cookie is in and of itself such a, I don't know, such a relief. Like one of the women that we quote on the website, she says, well, It was just a relief to find out that I had something. Now I can figure out what to do, but at least I know that it's not my fault. And so, again, we're dealing in a very complex domain because it's not just as simple as, you know, you have a disease, and even though at this point we don't know how to cure it, there's something you can do about it, but it's the emotional impact, the psychological impact, as well as the physical impact.
In your movie, there was one lady there that she had kept track and measured every ounce of food that she was eating, and she was still gaining weight. She went to the doctor, and he said, "Well, I just don't believe you. And you know why I don't believe you? Because there's no fat people in concentration camps." I wanted to reach into that video, that wonderful video you did. I tried to slap him.
The angel of love came in here.
Yes. Yeah, that a number of women have had a very similar response. And
can we talk go ahead.
No, go ahead, Sherry.
I just wanted you to because we don't have a lot of time left, and talk about some of the things that women can do to alleviate this.
So the thing that mostly we can do is we can stop the progression. So one of the things that I'm a big proponent of is the earlier you know, the earlier you can stop the progression. So there are four times actually in a woman's life that lipedema can either onset or exacerbation. And they are times, as you would imagine, of hormonal disturbance. So puberty, pregnancy, and perimenopause are three of the major times. And any kind of surgery, any major surgery, can also kick it in. So what women can do is what's called conservative treatment, complete decongestive therapies, or CDT. And what CDT is a combination of manual lymph drainage, exercise programs. While diet doesn't do a lot, we have begun to do research on a very low-carb, high-fat diet called the ketogenic diet. And anecdotally, we have quite a bit of success with women losing weight, as well as a reduction in pain and symptoms. So we are in the process of moving towards doing a clinical trial to get some scientific results to back up the anecdotal results. So there are things that that women can do. The other thing that we strongly recommend is to in some way get into a support structure. So that's why we have groups online and, the Lipedema Project supports education. We have online courses. We have a summit that we do a couple times a year where we have interviews with experts all over the world. And in some way, it's a shift for most women because, again, our media and our culture is so anti-fat bias. And it's something that many of us internalize. So many of us who have dealt with weight issues at some level feel guilt and shame and self-blame. And so it's a shift to being more centered and understanding that indeed it's a disease process. And you can empower yourself to begin to take control of your own disease process by education, awareness, treatment options, and actually begin to turn it around.
Well, I think that when I know that we were going to interview you and I read more of your materials, I really thought that this was such a perfect message with our audience, because our audience is so much about working with Sherry's software and Sound Health Options to figure out your issues or conditions or, you know, and see what your possibilities are, which is the same arena you're doing in terms of becoming self-empowered. So that when, if you do have to deal with a physician, you're going in with information for the physician, even though they may be resistant or, dare I use the term, stupid, or resistant, that you're actually empowered. You're no longer in the position of like, I have this, what do I do? We're really going to our practitioners in a position of power going, look, here's this research, here's this information, help me figure this out. Like the doctor that was, you know, in the weird way that he responded of like, that's great.
Yes.
It may, he, his answer was good, it's just his delivery sucked.
Oh, no. No, no, let me reframe that, because his delivery was like, because at that moment it was just what I needed, because he has been so supportive. And the other thing, let me say, is to really, so here's the, I don't know what to call this, the oxymoron really, is that as a patient, you go in and you want the doctor to give you the solution. And this is in some ways something that is a bit different, because what you're doing is, first of all, educate yourself. And when you go in with your doctor, you're going in as someone who's consulting with someone who has a lot more knowledge in many, many ways. Like, we have a sliver of knowledge around lipedema, but there's so much more in the context about the vascular system, about the metabolism, about the immune system, about all of these different components. What the doctor brings. The thing is sometimes it's getting through the shield, if you will, because that shield is part of our cultural norms, especially when someone is confronted with someone that looks like they are the way they are because of lifestyle choices. So oftentimes a doctor will come in, and if, especially if it's the first time seeing you, they might just have the assumption that your lifestyle choices are not supportive of your maintaining a normal weight. And so therefore go to, okay, let's go here, you know, change this and everything else will be okay. Well, it's a complex conversation. And the thing that I emphasize is that it's a delicate conversation that has to be well thought out. And when you go into it as a patient, you need to feel empowered enough. And one of the things that we are just publishing, in fact, I sent you the manuscript, and it should be out within the next 2 to 4 weeks, is something called an overview for clinicians. It's called Lipedema, the disease they call fat, an overview for clinicians. And it's a monograph about the disease written specifically for clinicians. And it will be available on our website, thelipedemaproject.org, because it is written by a number, there's 10 co-authors worldwide, all very renowned in their fields, because, you know, one of the things that women have written me and called me and talked to me about, you know, I go in to talk to my physician and I bring him this article or that article, and he says to me, he or she, not only, you know, it's also women doctors, they'll say to someone, oh, that's a crazy internet disease. It doesn't exist. So our part of our mandate, if you will, and our journey has been offering a credibility to a disease that has up until now not been recognized, and when it's seen, it's often been, you know, undermined, because in fact, you know, it's not believed to be a real disease. And so, as I say, it's a complex territory. But, you know, again, let me talk a little bit about the Lipedema Project. The Lipedema Project, and what makes it so unique, is it's a partnership between patients and doctors. Dr. Mark Smith, who is the senior vice chair at Northwell Health, which is a very large, complex healthcare system. There are 21 hospitals, a research center, and Hofstra School of Medicine is part of their whole complex. So he's the vice chair there of surgery. He stepped forward because he's his basic focus has been on cancer and cancer surgery. And as a secondary complication to a lot of cancer surgery, especially with the lymph nodes being removed, is lymphedema. And so lymphedema is something that is very, it's like a cousin. Lipedema and lymphedema oftentimes go hand in hand. So he stepped forward and has been a proponent and a champion for this. He, under his direction, he brought together experts from all over the world in April of 2015, had a think tank, which is where the monograph came out of that think tank, and a symposium, and gathering as much knowledge and starting to set an agenda for research. So there's this unique, I don't know how unique it is. I know it's unique to me. And when I started and began to feel partnering with different doctors on this, I felt blessed because I know not everybody does this, and I know not everybody has that. But there is an element and a quality of that that is available. And I think part of it is being able to know, educate yourself. You have to educate yourself. You have to know what you're talking about. And then find ways to engage the support of a physician to really work with you. And that's a really good way to move forward. It isn't easy. It just isn't easy. That's the thing. Because I hear from so many women, you know, I just, in fact, in the monograph, I put in the preface, you know, I had gotten a letter from one woman who said, I went to see my doctor and, you know, I left there sobbing. She refused to even accept that this is any such thing and I have no help. What am I going to do? I have to find a doctor. So my hope is that the more that we bring education and awareness and the more that women educate themselves and the more they talk to their physicians have some resources now. And one of the things, again, I feel blessed to be able to work with Dr. Smith is that he's bringing the beginning of a pilot course into Hofstra Medical School for next semester in September, October, November, somewhere in that timeline, where he's going to be part of bringing a course in on the lymphatic system, including lymphedema and lipedema as part of that beginning curriculum. Because until it gets into medical schools, the other thing, and this I really think is a blessing and a miracle, is that the Harvard Medical School is presenting a conference, a symposium in November of this year called the Harvard Lymphedema Symposium. And they're bringing together literally experts from all over the world, literally. The world's top microsurgeon from Taiwan is coming, as well as, you know, another doctor from Sweden and Israel and Europe and all over the U.S. And Dr. Smith will be speaking, and they've invited us to talk, and I'll be there speaking as well. They've invited us to talk about lipedema. So, you know, if when I started, let me go back to your initial question. If when I started trying to piece the puzzle pieces together to look at something and didn't even have a name for it. I didn't know what it was or anything. To say that 5 years later we'd be presenting at the Harvard Medical School, I would have said you're crazy. No way that could happen. And so I think that the reason that it's happened is because there's a significant amount of respect respect and compassion for one another. And that's actually one of the things that I've asked the doctors if they would be willing to do with me, is to write a monograph on the doctor-patient relationship, because I think that is the core, the crux, if you will, of what can turn this all around, not only with lipedema, but I think in the healthcare system.
We have several questions from the audience, but I also have two comments. People can have their vocal print and that analyzed, getting that feedback again, analyzed at our soundhealthportal.com. And I have done your voice from this show. Now, it may be a little off because I'm going through a special phone that is very, very accurate. But a couple of things we found was adiponectin is an issue, and that's in your chart as its receptor. Pancreatic amylase, and that's in your evaluation. And I'll send you this report right after we get off the air. And the other one is adiponectin, which controls the hormone, like you're saying, and it tells the body when to burn fat or not. And in a lot of these cases, the adiponectin receptor is at issue. So I find this with my family. I can see this in my mother. I can see it in my husband's mother. And now I have children and her children who have this. And we're just now trying to get information to her doctor. So I have sent them information about your summit material that you just finished. And is that still available?
Yes. So we keep everything available that we've done. And if you go to lipedemaproject.org, and there, right on the home page, there's a slider. And on the slider, there's four or five different things. And so the ebook will be available, we hope, within 2 to 4 weeks. It's with the developer and designer now. They're turning it from a Word document into a PDF, a Mobi and an EPUB, so that it can go on Amazon and iBooks. The summit is there. We have two summits, one from last year, which were with lipedema and lymphedema experts. This year's summit was on experts on the ketogenic diet and lipedema and lymphedema and any kind of lymphatic disorders. As I said, we've had an enormous amount of success, significant amount of success with women who've tried everything to lose weight and have been unsuccessful. And we're having, you know, one woman yesterday, and she lost 80 pounds since last summer when we started.
Wow.
So we're having significant movement. And so
that moves us into some of the questions.
And yes.
We will put on our site all of these links to you and how people can get to you.
Yes.
But you mentioned in the summit, and it was a lot of material, folks, the paleo diet and how that was working really well. Well, the three questions I'm going to put together from the audience is, one, could you speak a little about the paleo diet and ketosis, and is it okay for a diabetic to go on this diet?
It's not only okay, but it's been shown, and there's some scientific research and studies that it can basically remove diabetes type 2. I'm not sure about diabetes type 1, but I know diabetes type 2, which is adult onset diabetes. And the thing is paleo is a version. What we are working with is something called a ketogenic diet. Paleo has grains and a couple of other things, and we don't use any grains at all. So a ketogenic diet is a very low carb, high fat, moderate protein. So essentially it's about 20 grams of carbohydrates, which, if you don't know, that's a very low carbohydrates. So we're talking, you know, a few cups of greens in a day, because vegetables have carbohydrates. So very low carbohydrate, moderate protein, between 40 and 50 grams a day, and high fat, like 100 to 120 grams of fat a day, healthy fat. Now, we've been trained to believe that fat is not good for us, and in fact, is cholesterol-producing, and it will get a heart attack. Well, it's actually not true. And in the summer, I interview a number of people who've done in-depth research in this area and really go back to the food pyramid. What's striking, Sherry, absolutely stunning, is when you look at the CDC, which is the Centers for Disease Control, which has kept track of things for many, many years, when you look at their figures, the quote-unquote obesity epidemic started with the inception of the food pyramid, where they shifted from being predominantly protein and fat-based to being carbohydrate-based. And the interviews on the summit, when I say they're stunning, you know, as I started to piece this together, my diet from 1986 has been low carb, but low carb, and it was no processed foods. It was basically plant-based with protein and small amounts of fat. And I lost and maintained that 140-pound weight loss all those years, and it was good. But as I'm now eating, even the amount of carbohydrates I was eating was more than my body could handle well. So one of the things that happens, and I want to go back to your question about type 2 diabetes, which is that the problem is glucose. So our bodies burn glucose from mainly carbohydrates and protein. So the body metabolizes what we ingest and turns it into glucose for use for energy. Well, in a low-carb, high-fat diet, or the ketogenic way of eating, as it's called, what happens is you're actually shifting your metabolic system. So you move from predominantly glucose burning to fat burning. And they talk about it as becoming fat-adapted. And once you're fat-adapted, the excess fat in your body begins to burn, which is what we're trying to do, is access that fat that's stored. The issue is, and I am not a medical professional, so to the best of my ability to talk about everyone I, you know, the information I got from all the interviews that I did, is that essentially when you are on a diet cycle, the body sees the dieting as a restriction around food. Rather than readily releasing the calories that it's stored as fat, it actually holds on to it because it fears famine. And so oftentimes you'll hear people talk about the diet cycle where they go on a diet and then they end up regaining and then they gain more. And it's the body's way of ensuring that it's going to survive. So it's such a complex, I've said this many times in our conversation, it's very complex. And, you know, even experts in the field of obesity talk about it from that perspective, because it's not like one solution fits everyone. And so the ketogenic diet, while we've begun to find some really good success with it, I don't think will work for everybody. And it releases, you know, the going into ketosis releases the normal fat. We don't know if it touches the lipedema fat or what can touch the lipedema fat, in fact. It's a good exploration. I feel like we're in the very beginning. I think, Richard, you said that we're pioneering. I do feel like this is pioneering. Uh-huh. I also feel like there's an answer. I don't know what the answer is, but there is a solution and there is an answer. Whether we find it or how long it takes, that's all, you know, unknown at this point. But I think the first step in any, when I teach research, the very first thing that I have my students do is come up with a good research question. What's your question? You need to use that as a as a light, if you will, into the research. You need to find that out. And I think, you know, we started with what's lipedema, like what is it and what are the components. I think the question is even bigger than that. I think that the question that we're looking at is that there's this complex situation, condition, that includes lipedema, but also includes secondary obesity in at least 50% of the cases. What is it? Why? What are we doing? What are we not doing? What can we know about this that can help alleviate the suffering of literally millions of women?
And that's what we're trying to do here at the Research Center by setting up a way that people can help Sound Health gather data about lipedema. If they'll go to the soundhealthportal.com and go to our campaign, they can submit their vocal print, and we will compare it to what we have already done. And at the end, when we get all the data together, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Seo and see if there's anything else she wants us to include in what we're looking at people. Maybe then we can crack some of the edges of this very debilitating, heartbreaking disease. And I do believe it's a disease. I've seen the devastation in my own family of it. Thank you so much for bringing this to light. I certainly want to keep in touch.
Well, thank you, Sherry. It's been a wonderful time, and I really appreciate you and Richard and the work that you're doing and moving this forward. So thank you.
I knew this was going to be an adventure because there's so much, you know, it would be great sometime to have you back, I think, and have what have a whole conversation about what I would call the Kellogg Revolution.
Yes.
Which was, I began believe, the beginning of the end, you know, the beginning of the downfall of our diet was when that food pyramid suddenly went toward the Kellogg's Revolution versus what we had been doing for centuries as human beings walking around, you know, not chewing grains, all that thing. But we're out of time, so I must stop. But that's a whole conversation, I believe. So that was
really
wonderful.
That sounds wonderful.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you so much.
Catherine. Thank you so much. Everybody have a great rest of the week, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye. Catherine, you still there? Okay, great.